Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
We're the BBC News at 5 o'clock. This is Jason Kay. A former manager of the Fulham women's football team has told the BBC that extra precautions were put in place to protect players from the club's late former owner, Mohamed Al-Fayed. The billionaire also owned the department store Harrods. More than 20 former employees there have accused him of sexually assaulting them while the store was under his ownership. Harrods' current owners say they're utterly appalled by the allegations. One of the lawyers representing the alleged victims, Maria Muller, said the allegations weren't limited to Britain.
It's just been so many bad things from each woman that I've spoken to that has been absolutely shocking. You just would not imagine that this kind of thing would take place. But not only did it take place, it happened over an extended period of time all over the world.
A senior United Nations official has warned that the Middle East is at risk of a conflict that could far exceed the destruction already seen in the region. The UN Political Affairs Chief, Rosemary DiCarlo, was addressing a meeting of the Security Council after Hezbollah members were killed by exploding pagers and handheld radios in Lebanon.
Too many lives have been lost. Too many people have been displaced. And too many livelihoods have been destroyed. But if things continue as they are, we risk seeing a conflagration that could dwarf even the devastation and suffering witnessed so far. There is still room for diplomacy, which must be used without delay.
The death row inmate has been executed in the US state of South Carolina just days after the key witness for the prosecution claimed he was innocent. Freddie Owens had been convicted of killing a shop worker during an armed robbery in 1997. But on Wednesday, his co-defendant Stephen Golden told the state Supreme Court that Owens wasn't present when the crime took place. The 46-year-old was killed by lethal injection anyway after the court rejected emergency motions for a stay of execution. The British heavyweight boxers Anthony Joshua and Daniel Dubois will face each other this evening in a world title fight at Wembley Stadium. Joshua is hoping to become the world champion for the third time by taking the IBF belt from his rival. A week-long search for an escaped capybara in Shropshire has ended in success. The large rodent, called Cinnamon, had evaded zoo staff for days, but is now safely back in her enclosure. Bob Hockenhull has the details.
Staff at Hoo Zoo in Telford finally spotted the elusive rodent at a pond not very far away. Cinnamon was able to elude her keepers by hiding in thick undergrowth. The story of Cinnamon the escapee has captured people's imagination, but for now, the zoo wants her to stay out of the public eye so she can recuperate.
And the weather, there'll be showers across southern England and Wales today with the risk of thunderstorms and hail. It'll be sunny mostly elsewhere. That's the BBC News at 5:03.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
The voice of sport.
It's Anthony Joshua versus Daniel Dubois for the IBF World Heavyweight title.
Anthony Joshua with a stunning statement here.
Let's go, what we've got to lose.
Two hard-hitting British heavyweights go head-to-head at Wembley Stadium.
Here, full ringside commentary.
This Saturday from 10 p.m.
For 5 Live and BBC Sounds.
On the Football Daily, the Women's Football Weekly, with Ben Haynes, Ellen White and Jen Beattie.
Hello and welcome to the Women's Football Weekly. And Ellen, the WSL is back.
Hello, welcome back. Oh, I'm buzzing. I'm so excited.
Because we've got a bit of news for everyone. This is really cool.
Oh, it's exciting.
We've got a brand new co-host, 5-time WSL winner, 4-time FA Cup winner, 4-time League Cup winner, 24 international goals, which I'm very keen to get into in a second. 170 appearances for Arsenal. Can anyone tell who it is yet? 143 appearances for Scotland. Over 100 appearances for Man City. Welcome to the Women's Football Weekly, our brand new co-host, Bay FC's Jen Beattie.
What an intro, Ben. Thanks, mate.
Yeah, we've really like gone for the big hype there. But I do want to pick your brains. 24 international goals. You're rivaling Ellen out here.
No way. No, I can't tip off the big Ellen White. No way. Mate, striker era. I played a little bit as a striker as a kid, and then set pieces. Love throwing a centre-back up there, I guess. Banged in a few.
Ellen, you must be buzzing to have Jen with us as well. I'm going to let you behind the curtain. Jen, Els is absolutely buzzing. So yeah, excited.
I thought I was keeping that pretty low-key, to be honest. I'm so happy. I'm so happy. It's going to be amazing.
Very fun season ahead. Let's turn focus to this week. All things WSL preview. Just before we get into it, you can get in touch with us by emailing footballdaily@bbc.co.uk. Maybe put in the subject heading something like Women's Football Weekly, because obviously there are so many shows going out at the moment, or something fun in the subject heading, and we can get as many of your questions answered as possible. So get your questions in for Ellen and for Jen. We've got some great stuff from new Arsenal signing Mariona Caldente, and we'll be going right the way through the transfer window, but we'll begin with how the title race might shape up this year. So last season, Man City finished on the same points as Chelsea. Just to remind you how things ended, Chelsea with three games to go are behind Man City after losing 4-3 away at Liverpool in one of the games of the season. It's then in City's hands, who are ahead on points and on goal difference. Chelsea win their last three games, scoring 15 goals in the process. And Man City lose against Arsenal in their penultimate game. Chelsea then nab the title. And Ellen White, I was desperate to get this in. I went on about goal difference the entirety of last season, and you laughed at me and laughed at me, and it came down to goal difference.
And I fully supported you every single week. I was like, yeah, absolutely, Ben. I think that would definitely happen.
What a load of
absolute nonsense. You're not bad, are you? You know what you're talking about.
Well, do you know what? I just felt like the way that it was panning out, I definitely didn't see Man City dropping points in the way that they did.
No, I didn't see that. What Chelsea did in those last few games was outrageous.
It's such a ridiculous thing that we're sort of talking about somehow bridging a gap that doesn't even really exist. But Jen, City might potentially have found someone to bridge that non-existent gap, those seven goals in Viv Miedema.
I know. What a signing. Still weird to think, you know, that she made the move, and, you know, to see her in Man City shirts over pre-season has been such a change, I think, for everyone. I think, you know, to have her first game as well, being back at Arsenal and back at the Emirates, that's going to be, it will be emotional. There's no doubt about it. I think when you leave a team after having been there for so long and your first game back, for the start of the season, is against the old team, that is going to be difficult. But look, I don't think anyone wants to play against Viv Miedema, no matter what. If she's coming back from an ACL, I think she's still got some of her best football yet to play. She's still young. She's still got so many footballing seasons ahead of her, and Man City have earned an absolute dime. I think she's awesome, and a huge credit to them for getting that over the line, because she's an unbelievable player and no doubt will add like that extra edge that Man City needed.
I was just going to think, do you think if she scores the Emirates, is she going to do a low-key celebration, or she's just going to go mental in front of, like, the bench?
Ah, right, but this doesn't celebrate anyway.
Yeah.
There's no way, like...
Can you imagine, though?
She'll just, like, even if she does score...
slide.
Just, like, solitary thumbs up from her and then move on. She's so sort of... She underplays absolutely everything, but she does promise to be very, very important for Man City. We're going to hear from her very shortly, but first, here's Man City manager Gareth Taylor.
I'm someone who's had a lot of setbacks in my football career and in my coaching career, and what I've tried to do is be quite balanced in the good moments and in the difficult moments, because nothing more than actually, if you give your best and you give absolutely everything, and you know, you saw we did that as a team last season, we put the lot out there. You know, we really gave it everything and we came up short. You know, we had 55 points, which was probably our record haul, usually enough to win you the league, won 18 games, and in a 22 game season, that's some going, and it still ultimately wasn't enough. It was seven goals difference, and when Chelsea go to Bristol and take eight out of them and take one against Spurs and then six at Man United, then that shows that they really turned the gas on at that stage of the season. And we had a couple of little issues. We lost Bunny Shaw at that time, three games to go, which was tough. But I feel this season now we're kind of set up a little bit more at the top end of the pitch, that if we were to lose potentially those big players, that we've got as good players to step in.
I was going to ask you how you bridge the gap, but it's not really
goals.
A gap.
Seven goals, that's it. Just score some more goals and we'll be okay. Yeah.
You like got some people to help you do that, some good signings this summer?
Yeah, we're pleased. I think, obviously Viv is we're working on her in a number of kind of positions specifically. We know what she can bring.
Tell us. Can you give us the insight? What are the positions?
Well, no, I mean, listen, she's notoriously been known as a number nine or someone who plays behind a striker. So I think when you have those types of options at the top end of the pitch, the likes of Mary Fowler, Alba Fagino, Chloe Kelly, Lauren Hemp, Bunny Shaw, and then you've got players like Viv Jesse Park, Laurel Coombs, Jill Raw to come back. You know, those players, Laura Blinkhill-Brown, we have some good talented players up there. They all bring different things. So we feel like we've strengthened a little bit in that area, which hopefully is going to make the difference.
I think for me, football has obviously always been really, really important, but I've only made football decisions based off two things, and that's my happiness off the pitch and on the pitch. When I spoke to Gareth last year, I knew the football was going to be fine. And I think if you put one and one together, me still living in the UK, London is 2 hours away, it was just kind of the perfect step in between. And yeah, so far, as I've said, like, I've really settled in on the pitch. I'm starting to get to know, yeah, the girls off the pitch as well, so that's going to be better for me. But yeah, it was just a one plus one that kind of made this a very easy decision in the end.
Did you lean on anyone? Is there anyone you sort of speak to back home or back home in London? Are there people that you can talk to be like, can I just run through this with you to bounce some ideas off you?
I think a lot of people, like, obviously I'm really close with the girls, like, obviously with Beth, speak about football all the time. My brother used to play well, he's still playing football right now, so he understands it too. But also some of the other Arsenal girls, I was like, look, guys, like, you know me, in a sense, on the pitch, off the pitch, what do you think is best for me? And, of course, people have said different things, and people might have thought I was going to make a different step, but yeah, just, this felt like me, and this felt like the right thing for me to do at this time.
You've got quite interesting games to kind of kick you off, as if you needed any pressure on that. Talk us through your start then.
Obviously, as you say, like, ideally, we would have had an easier start than what we're going to get. But I think the one good thing about the games coming up is that Arsenal are in the exact same position as we are.
Have you considered what happens if you score against Arsenal?
Well, to be honest, like, I never celebrate anyway, so it's not really much to consider for me.
So it's almost disrespectful because you're doing the same thing you always used to do at school. Maybe you should go crazy now just to mix it up.
No, absolutely not. Obviously, I've been speaking with the girls about it and everything, and I think going back will be very different and maybe at times difficult, but at the same time, I think it's something I'm looking forward to. I've obviously spent 7 years at Arsenal. I've always had a really good connection with the fans. I appreciate how well they're doing for Arsenal as a club. And for me to flip that around, like, it's just going to be the new era, and it's going to be the new WSL era at Man City for me. So I think there's plenty of things for me to look forward to.
Gareth Taylor and Viv Miedema there. So, Ellen, what do you reckon? No celebration?
Imagine she just pulls something out of the bag.
Knee slide.
I can just see her scoring, though. It's like written in the stars, I feel like. And I totally get where she's coming from, because obviously she's been there for 7 years. Fans, they're special, aren't they? The community they've created there. So I think, yeah, I think it'll be different for her. It'll be a little bit strange for her, but she seems like she's happy. And that's the main thing, I think, for Viv.
Did you do celebrations against old clubs?
Maybe.
I don't remember. Did you go and stick it to people?
So one of the ones I remember is, if anyone does, the free kick I scored for Notts County against Arsenal.
Yeah, I remember that.
And that was the first goal I scored against Arsenal, and I went mental. It wasn't at Arsenal, it was at Notts County, so it was all right. But yeah, I don't know. I celebrate and go crazy. So.
You've got to enjoy
No judging it.
Jen, you know Viv really well. How long do you think it will take her to settle both on and off the pitch?
I think on pretty quickly. Don't get me wrong. I think, you know, having played at both clubs and knowing what Man City's like and the style of football that's played there, I thought it was really interesting listening to Gareth and kind of him explaining her different roles that she can play on the pitch, you know, number 9 in the 10, because she was starting to develop that so much more towards the end of Arsenal, you know, playing much more in a deeper role. And I'll never forget that goal against United where she picked up and just threaded it right through to Blackstenius, and what a goal that was. But she's just got so much quality. So on the pitch, not worried at all. I think, of course, having been in London for that amount of time and living with your partner and having the whole setup, that is difficult. And it's a brand new city. And she knows that herself. I think when she speaks about speaking to us as teammates, like, that was such an authentic interview, because that's exactly what she did. You know, she was like, what do you think? What's Manchester like? you know, players that had been there, players that had played there, asking for advice. And nobody likes change, right? 7 years is a long time to be at the same club and living in the same place and being around the same staff and people. So I think it's okay to say it might take a bit of time, but she'll get there. We all know how great a club Man City is. It's got a great group of people. And she is going to love it. Like, what a setup is.
Yeah, it is really hard. It's challenging. You're uprooting your life somewhere different, living somewhere different, meeting new friends, new people, new style of play, new staff members. It's a whole new city for her. I think the players that they've got there will be amazing in the sense of helping her kind of know what the city's like and also, you know, how Man City work as a club. So I think she'll be fine. And I'm really excited to see what her role will actually be this season, whether she will be more predominantly the 9 or the 10, or it'd just be really exciting and amazing to see her back healthy and scoring goals.
Did you guys know this, that she texted Steph to check it was okay for her to have the number 6?
That's
Did you know that? That's a really lovely thing to do, isn't it? I don't know about you two, but I really feel like small things like that say a lot about a person, about how thoughtful they are, about them actually going the extra mile to consider that will have an impact on people that have a legacy at the club as well.
Definitely. And I think, you know, it is like Steph's had that number since Man City started in the WSL. And obviously she's captain, she's iconic legend for Man City. And I don't want to say it holds weight, the shirt, in terms of it's heavy, but there's a lot of pride in wearing that number and that shirt. And I think that's such a lovely thing. And it shows the type of person that Viv is, that she wanted to make sure it was okay. And I'm sure the fans will be really excited to see that number back.
The Steph Horton shoes are big shoes to fill.
Oh, massive. Like, legend of the club, been there since day dot. Like, what she's built at Man City and, you know, the respect levels that she not just has at that club, but across the women's game in general is huge. And I think Viv doing that is just a touch of class, right? And I'm actually not even surprised one bit. I think players at that top level, when you have that respect between each other, I think that's such an amazing thing. So for Viv to do that, and also she's coming from a place where someone else has taken her number at Arsenal, right? So she knows that feeling. She understands that it can be weird. And I agree with Ellen, it doesn't have that much weight, but it's still, you know, you're still a little bit attached to it. And I just think that's such a class from Viv, but not surprised whatsoever. She's a thinker. She's a deep person, you know, she really cares about the emotions of people and just the respect that she'll have for Steph. I'm not surprised whatsoever. And Steph, I know for a fact, would have massively appreciated that as well. So it's awesome to see.
One that we'll be watching very closely, all three of us, seeing how Viv Miedema gets started, but also whether she can help Man City bridge the gap. If we broaden this out just a little bit more, do we think that Arsenal and City have done enough over the summer to potentially get a little bit closer to Chelsea?
Well, it came down goal difference, didn't it?
I feel like I'm a mediator in amongst the goal difference.
I feel like it's going to be your role this year.
That's why I've been brought on.
I think obviously Viv is a great signing. I think it all depends really of how their season start as well. Arsenal have made some good signings as well. So yeah, they've both got challenging starts, but I think they both have strengthened. But yeah, just be see how they get on those first few weeks of the season, really.
Arsenal will be playing their home games at the Emirates this season. Big smile on your face straight away. That's massive, isn't it?
Oh, it's awesome. You know, and credit to Arsenal. I think they've done it gradually. Like, I'll never forget a few seasons ago, it was like 3 WSL games at the Emirates, and then it bridged the gap to 6, and now it's every home game. And I think they've done it really strategically with building crowds and building fans, and on that, the way that the fan base have actually got behind it and, you know, breaking WSL records over the past couple of seasons and selling out for Champions League. It was just, you could really feel the hype building, but what an atmosphere that place is. Like, I genuinely can't wait to go back over December and catch a couple of games there and being able to support the girls. Like, it's just an awesome place. So to be opening their season against Man City at home at the Emirates, I've no doubt there's going to be a huge crowd. And again, credit to the club for really backing the team and knowing where women's football's at. And that's what women's teams deserve. It's one club, one stadium, get behind them and really show that fans will turn up and support, because they've shown it time and time again. I think what that club's built is an incredible thing. And it's awesome to see it. So no doubt it's going to be a massive game on Sunday.
What about on the pitch, Ellen? Do you think they've done enough over the summer to strengthen?
I like Mariona Caldento. I think she's a proven winner, what she's achieved at Barcelona. Even just seeing her in those two Champions League games against Rangers, her crossing ability, the way she can find the pocket. I think she really brings that experienced head as well, which I think would be really important for Arsenal. I don't, you know, she's not coming in and taking the shoes of Viv because she's a very different player, but I think she can add another dimension to Arsenal. I think that's really exciting, and I think she's a big one. I'm excited to see kind of what she does this season.
And we can hear from Mariona Caldenti now, alongside fellow Spaniard Lea Codina. And we chatted at the media access day just a little bit about why so many Spanish players are keen to come over to play in England.
Well, I think the Spanish league is maybe not going how we would like it. And when England won the Euros, then everyone could see a really big change in the league and going more hard for the women, and I think it was a change, and that what maybe we miss in Spain, it's not, we won the World Cup and it changed nothing. So I think it is right now the best league to play in England, and it is excited for the players to, well, like a challenge.
That's really interesting that it was felt in Spain, that you could see that things were moving forward in England.
Yeah, it's weird to say, but it was like this. England won the Euros in 2022 and we won the World Cup last year. And I really feel that nothing changed in Spain. And here you can see that everything is changing, everything is improving. The teams or the clubs are spending more money to try to go up. So it's why more Spanish players are coming here, because how she said it's like a challenge and an exciting place.
Do you talk to the other Spanish players about your experience? Are they asking you questions about what
it's
like?
Yeah, of course. In the national team, they ask a lot. They want to know how it's going here. And, well, I hope that we can bring more people. I'm trying to do my job.
Doing your agent duties. Yeah bringing
no,
in more
but
big signing.
Obviously they ask. They follow the league, so they can see how it's going here. And yeah, I hope that we can bring more people.
And you've both had an amazing experience in the Champions League just over the course of the last few years. How far off do you think Arsenal are from success in the Champions League?
We are closer. Like, this year, honestly, I'm going to speak like what I think, that we have to do a big step in the Champions League. We have the team, we have everything. The club is giving us everything we need. So it's our job to give them back what they gave us.
Mariona, can you tell us a little bit about your experiences in the Champions League? I mean, you've had about as good an experience as it's possible to have as a player last season.
I did, but at the same time, I lost some finals as well. And when I arrived in Barca, we never go through to the last the quarterfinal, semifinal. So we actually did we built something, and it was improving every year. We had a really hard losings where that make us thinking, okay, we need to do something else. We need to make a step. And I think now it's obviously like we did. So I really enjoyed my time in Barca. I was really, really happy. I think we became the best team in the world. And yeah, I think just the mentality we had, it's like we need to improve every day, every training, every game. Nothing was enough. We won 7-0 and it's not enough. There are something we can improve. And I think that's the mentality. We need to compete every day.
Did you like that?
I love it. I hate losing. So I think that competition, she can say it. But I think that's something really needed in a team, that you want to win. Everyone needs to be challenging in training every day. We need to compete, to try to be better as an individual player, as a team.
Lea Codina and Mariona Caldente there. Jen, that's really fascinating, listening to someone who's won the lot, has the hunger to go out and keep winning, feel that
things off the pitch and not matching her ambition.
Yeah, and I think it's so interesting listening to both of them, actually, knowing that, you know, they've had success in the national team and hearing the frustrations that they have back in the Spanish league. And I think it's, again, it's credit to the English game and the investment that's been put behind clubs, and knowing that there's so much opportunity to bring those like really high quality players into this league, which is what we all want, right? But even just listening to their mentalities, right? Like winning everything 7-0, but then still having that, you know, fine detail of what can we improve on. And I think that's what's kind of scary about Caldente, about coming into Arsenal, like, and being able to really drive that, which I think she, you know, even from speaking to the girls already, what a player, unbelievably technical, just football intelligent, you know, second to none, I think I would say. So what she can bring to that team, I think, and again, teams need to be more than one dimensional, right? Like, we're not saying she's a like for Viv, but it's a different tactical way she can play if she's on the field. And if you're going to be in all tournaments and all winning all trophies, you have to be able to play different ways. And I think she just adds a different edge.
Just while we're on the transfer window, two more that concern Arsenal and Barcelona. So Aitana Bonmatí staying with Barcelona, signed a new contract there, but Kira Walsh, a huge bid went in from Arsenal last minute. And I don't know, what was your reaction? It was something like, that is an absolutely insane amount of money.
It's just, even just seeing it written down
here.
What was the
bid? 930,000.
Isn't that just absolutely incredible? And we did speak about it, didn't we, about potentially the £1 million transfer could happen soon. So,
Trying to remember, this is only a couple of years ago. What was Kira's original price?
400, was it?
400, 450 or 45, something around that.
Yeah.
To think that over the course of a few years, she is very close to becoming the first £1 million player.
Insane. She's a phenomenal player.
Let's look around the rest of the league then. Some big statement signings coming from Brighton. They've got hold of Fran Kirby from Chelsea. And there's a bit of a surprise coming in, Jen, with Nikita Paris joining from Man United. Why do you think these players have chosen Brighton, and how have Brighton been able to pull in Fran Kirby and Nikita Paris?
You know what? I think Brighton have quietly gone about their business over the past few years, I would say. If you speak to people, their facilities are awesome. You know, the way that they look after the players, they've really stepped up and kind of quietly gone about it and really improved the sort of behind the scenes and put the investment where it was needed. To bring in two quality players like Fran Kirby and Nikita Paris in this window, that's exactly what you need, I think, to go to the next level. So much experience in this league. You know, they've been there, done it at all levels. I think it really shows a marker of what they're trying to do as a team, but they genuinely, for me, have done it gradually. And I think that's what's so interesting. So I've got some high hopes for them this season. I think to have sort of two players like that leading the line going into this next season, it's making a really big statement.
Do you think Euros being on the horizon plays a part there, Ellen?
Potentially for Nikita. Clearly, it's got to be about game time. Potentially, she wasn't getting the amount of game time that she wanted. You know, she had a good end of the season. She was their top goal scorer last season, Man United. Obviously won the FA Cup as well. So, yeah, it's obviously a long way from home as well for her. And it's obviously a fit for her and, you know, a potential to get minutes under her belt and, you know, for her to get back into that England team. She needs to play every week, assisting, goal scoring, you know, the likes of kind of Lauren Hemp, Chloe Kelly, Beth Mead. Those are the wingers that England have got. So she needs to obviously be doing more than them, really, to get back in the England squad.
I think it shows a bit of an intention as well. It was like you said, if you know, she's a home bird, Liverpool, to move away from home, it still shows the sort of drive that she has to still go on and really achieve stuff and get back into the England squad. So I have a huge amount of respect for players that are doing that at whatever age or part of your career you're in, but to be moving away from home, that shows some amount of drive to still want to, you know, be able to push on.
Jen, it is so wonderful to have you on the squad.
No, guys, honestly, when you had me on last season, I had the most fun. So I'm so buzzing to do this with you guys. Thank you so much for having me on.
We'll let you know if you're here next week.
Yeah, if I get bumped off a few episodes in, I'll get it.
And that is where we'll leave it today. This season, though, we really want to hear from you. Get your questions in for Ellen and for Jen. Any big issues surrounding the women's game, anything that you want to ask, you can get in touch by emailing us at footballdaily@bbc.co.uk, and we'll try and get as many of your questions to Ellen and Jen as possible. See you all next time.
I'm Kim Cattrall, and I want to tell you about my new podcast, a new audio drama telling the history of the CIA from the inside out.
The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked.
He's got to convince Congress to give him an open checkbook now.
America has suffered its worst domestic attack of the 20th century at Pearl Harbor.
How do we make contact with the NKGB?
Central Intelligence, starring me, Kim Cattrall, Ed Harris, and Johnny Flynn.
There's $50,000 in it for you if you say yes.
Listen on BBC Sounds.
Five Live Premier League Sunday.
Mikel Arteta to Arsenal is confirmed.
We were sad when he leaves. He's a ball for beyond a good manager.
Arsenal have confirmed the signing of Declan Rice.
Manchester City have agreed a deal to sign Erling Haaland.
Champions again. They've won it 4 years running.
I think Arsenal will get even closer again.
Their level is higher and higher.
Five Live Premier League Sunday.
Welcome to you, Manchester City against Arsenal.
Listen, Sunday from 12 on Five Live and BBC Sounds.
This is Five Live Boxing.
So after 3 months of planning and 5 days of publicity and tours and meets and confrontations and Buckingham Palace and all sorts of lunacy here in London, the fight is close. It's going to be fight day. This is the preview show. This is the show where we forget everything that's happened all week and we just talk about what might happen when that first bell goes. Daniel Dubois, Anthony Joshua, 96,000 people at Wembley Stadium. I'm Steve Bunce, and this is most definitely Five Live Boxing. Now, after the week that we've had, and we'll go through the week day by day in a moment, we're doing this from a glorious patio of a hotel overlooking, if you look really hard, Regent's Park. Don't worry, no one's staying here. We just managed to get a bit of use of this patio. I'm joined now by former two-weight world champion Carl Frampton. And Carl, first of all, let me just welcome you by saying I'm not quite sure what days you were here, what days you weren't here. You seem, because I was with you last Friday in Belfast at the testimonial night, which turned into a Kiko Martinez loving, which was beautiful, by the way. Then you were here on Monday, I'm sure. I'm not sure if you were here Tuesday. Did you come Wednesday? I know you were here yesterday. It's been a bit of a blur this week.
It's been mental. I feel a little bit under the weather, I think. And I think it's because I've been doing so much. But yeah, I was in on Monday. Went back Tuesday morning.
You look sure you had to think about that yourself then.
Then on Monday, back Tuesday morning, home, on an early flight. Little girls football training on Tuesday evening, and then back out on Wednesday afternoon. I've been here ever since.
What have you made of the day so far? So it's Billingsgate, Leicester Square Odeon, Wembley with the Buckingham Palace mock-up thing, and then yesterday at the Guildhall, which is ancient. You know, there's stones there that have been there, put there by the Romans 2,500 years ago. What have you made of the week?
It's been, as you expect, I think, when there's big events on, especially when the Saudis get behind it. The stuff that I've seen at Wembley Arena with the fake Buckingham Palace and stuff, it's everything just gets blown up, doesn't it? But it's been good. The Guildhall, what a place for a press conference. Not the typical press conference.
It was ridiculous.
It was beautiful building, but it's been good. It's been very. I mean, and that's what you expect when there's big fights on at Wembley Stadium. You expect it to be good, and it's been exactly that.
Now, what we're trying to do when we're with the fighters all week long and the trainers and the promoters is we're looking for tells. We're looking for signs. Have you seen anything in Dubois that either worries you, concerns you, or fills you with joy? And the same question about AJ. Have you seen anything in AJ that worries you, fills you with joy?
Nothing really. AJ seems very relaxed. Dubois, a bit more tense, but that, I think that's him,
isn't
Dubois. He's not that comfortable speaking to the media. A lot of the stuff he says is just repetitive. He says the same things over and over, but that's fine.
Yeah.
Typically Dubois. But AJ seems... He seems relaxed, very, very relaxed. Both guys seem confident, though.
That's understandable after the last two wins. The last years of their careers have been, you'd argue, perhaps the sort of best year. I think that Dubois matured into something we weren't sure he was going to mature into. And AJ has had that change from
you know, from that man that fought Usyk, who's unrecognisable from the AJ there at the moment, yeah. and this new man who I argue this is the best AJ we've ever seen. He's smarter, more vicious.
Yeah, I think the link up with Ben Davison has been excellent. I really rate Ben as a coach, and you can see that they know what AJ does best. He made a statement. I read somewhere that he's been watching. He's been watching old footage of himself.
Yes,
to remind himself how good he was and what he can do when he wants to be destructive and he wants to be aggressive. And that's the AJ I'm hoping we find on Saturday night.
Yeah.
And Dubois teaming up with Don Charge. There's been a bit of concern about there's been no sign of Don, but I think he's just doing the sensible things. He's got a bit of a cold, staying away from the fighters. That's fine. That's what you would do. I think it would be a bit... it would be silly if he was hanging around and having his face Absolutely. About the place if he is under the weather. So it's a really good fight, Bunce.
Yeah.
A really good fight. And what you said about Dubois' run of form, certainly him anyway, his last two fights, he showed us all something that we didn't know he had.
And more importantly, I think he showed himself something that maybe he'd come to doubt, because when you keep reading and you keep hearing and you keep hearing the sniggers that you've got no heart, you've got no desire, you've got no stomach and you really shouldn't be fighting, your skin can only be so thick, Carl.
Yeah.
You know, you dealt with criticism in some fights, maybe unfairly, but it doesn't matter how tough you are, doesn't matter how many times you say it doesn't affect you. It sits there somewhere.
Absolutely. Look, I mean, it went to the extreme level. He was really, really hammered and criticised. Look, yes. I was one of the outspoken ones when the fight ended against Joe Joyce and he had the terrible eye injury. I don't think he should be put in that position to make that decision himself. But
bingo.
I was maybe slightly over the top in my criticism.
A lot of
for
people
him.
Were.
But he's had it from all angles, Big Dubois. Mm. And he's got to be seeing it. Maybe he tries his best to stay away from it. But it has to have had an effect. And I think what he's done in his last two fights and going through the adversity, especially against Miller, more so than even the Hrgović fight, but Miller is a big brute of a man, hard to push around. And he eventually got to him and done what he had to do.
Carl, I'm going to start with Dubois, because I'm going to start with... You've been in big fights, you know, you've come out at, in Belfast when you won the world title 10 years ago. That was the point of that evening last week. But you've also been at the MEN, sold out before Christmas, absolutely packed. You can feel the reverberations of the crowd. So you're used to it. And the opponent in Manchester was also used to it, Josh Warrington, because he'd won the title at Elland Road. I want to deal with the day, the afternoon, the evening, and the minutes before they walk out and try and put your head inside their heads. How's Dubois going to handle that pressure?
Well, it's going to be difficult, but I think that a lot of people have AJ as the favourite and the strong favourite in
Big
the fight.
Favorite, yeah.
So in that sense, that relieves a little bit of the pressure of Dubois, but he'd be backing himself to do the job. And I mean, how does he deal with it? I don't know. Someone talked about AJ's use to these Wembley fights, and which, I mean, do you ever get used to fighting at Wembley in front of a sold-out audience? But it's not as if Dubois hasn't been involved in big fights before. Yeah. He, you know, with 60,000, I think, when he fought in Poland against Usyk.
Big fights and big pressure.
And big pressure as well, absolutely. I don't know if there's much of a difference in terms of the pressure of fighting in front of a 60,000 crowd and a 96,000 crowd. I don't know if there is. I genuinely don't know if there is.
Once you go above 25,000 and you're outdoors, you think it all just blends into one big blur of people. The AJ figures are the Vladimir Klitschko fight, 90,000. The Carlos Takam fight, 78. The Parker, Joseph Parker, 78,000. Povetkin at Wembley, 80,000. Usyk, the first fight at Tottenham Hotspur's ground, 66,000. And then Saturday night, 96,000. It's just under 500,000 people have paid to see AJ in a main event. And yet AJ told me that just before he makes that walk, and he'll be walking first as the challenger, just before he makes that walk, he has to check himself.
Is he walking first?
Yeah, he's walking first, yeah. I've had that confirmed.
Okay, the notes that we got, Bunce, about half an hour ago said Dubois walking first.
Well, that's interesting, because the notes I'm working from are from yesterday.
Okay.
So maybe they have been upgraded.
Yeah.
How do you stand on that? When one man's defending a world title, okay, one man's more popular, but how do you stand on that, Carl?
I think the world champion should always go second.
Yeah, so do I.
But in saying that, if I'm Daniel Dubois at this point in time, I wouldn't be calling myself a world champion because, you know,
the upgrade from interim.
He was upgraded from interim, and I think you have to win it rather than giving a title in a boardroom. I think you have to go and win it. Now, if he beats AJ, certainly he should be entitled to call himself a world champion. But at this point, I just don't understand, why was the title not vacant? Could have been a vacant title. Is there any need for? Was there any need for the upgrade?
Well, only that he fought for the interim when he fought that one particular fight. That was for the interim title against Hrgović. So it's just that ancient need that we have for giving fights belts and titles. Something that, of course, that Turki Alashek, we know, sort of off the record, on the record, isn't keen about. You know, he's not really a governing bodies kind of guy, Turki Alashek.
Which isn't a bad thing for boxing, bodies...
Let me ask you about that then, okay, because Richie, when I talked to Richie Woodall about this, he wasn't having it, now you've got to win a belt. Before you fight Kiko Martinez, and I'm assuming you walked second that night, I can't remember, so I walked first that night.
I walked first, yeah.
Absolutely, I can't remember. So, you're fighting Kiko Martinez, it's for the world title. For a little bit more money in a foreign land, would you have fought Kiko Martinez just over 12 rounds? Instead of for the world title, just over 12 rounds?
Yeah, I think I would have.
Yeah.
I think I would have, yeah. Obviously, back then, before you've won a world title, that's what you want to do. That's the big
win
goal.
A world title.
Win a world title, and you can call yourself a world champion. But now, with hindsight as well, it's a business, really, and it's all about security for yourself and your family, especially when you've got young kids. So, money talks, Bunce.
Absolutely does. Yeah. Well, look at Jai Oppertai. When he had that fight, and he ended up giving up his title, relinquished his title because they wouldn't have it. And look at Anthony Kakachi. Look at the situation he's in where the IBF not sanctioning his fight with Josh Warrington, but Kakachi loses the belt, which isn't on the line, if he were to lose the fight, which is an absurd anomaly.
Strange, but it makes no difference for Anto. You know what I mean? He's in the position where if he lost the fight, then he would have lost the title if it was on the line. So he'll be hoping to win the fight and still be champion. Mm. And then he has a tough mandatory if he does come through against a guy called Sugar Nunes. It's a good fight. It's a tough fight.
Let's get back to Dubois and let's get back to AJ. So we've established that Dubois going into where he hasn't been that many times, but he has been before. AJ's going into a place where he's been lots of times, but he still has to take a deep breath and focus himself before he walks through, as he said, before I walk through the curtain, before I walk out, before you look at that sea of lights, everybody holding up their phones like some kind of Coldplay tribute crowd, 96,000 people playing Coldplay tribute. Once they get in the ring, that's when I'm looking for signs. That's when you and I like to be close. We don't like to be, you know, 63 rows back, because there's signs there, Carl. You're looking at the man, the way the man's breathing. Yeah. You're just looking at the way he's doing stuff when he's not got someone in his face.
Yeah.
And if I see them taking that triple breath, I don't know about you, but I'm looking for signs.
No, I get that. I do. I'd be looking for signs as well. I think that's the time when you start to look for signs right then, when the fight's about to happen. Yeah. People talking about signs, kind of who looks away first at a head-to-head and all, I think it's all nonsense. Everyone likes to become kind of part-time psychologists when they don't really know what's going on.
What are talking about anyway?
But I think when the ring walk's being done and when you're in the ring and there's a few minutes before the fight actually takes place, that's when you can tell whether a fighter's up for it or not.
And you start to see what happens in the opening round of this fight, because the more people I'm talking to, and that includes the boxers, the trainers and the promoters, I'm getting a variety of different things. How do you see that first first bell, the place goes quiet, then there's a roar, they come to the middle of the ring?
I'm not sure, Bonte. It's a hard one to call. I think that Dubois looks lean to me. He looks leaner than he has been in the world, which suggests he's maybe going to try and move a bit more, not be as gung-ho and go forward.
And try and box.
And I think that could be a sensible decision for them, because the longer the fight goes on, for me, Dubois has a better chance. He does have a big engine for a heavyweight, and as we've seen in his last couple of fights,
he doesn't mind coming on down the straight.
He's got a bit of grit, and he push on. his jab is going to be the key. Something that people are overlooking in this fight as well. Dubois goes quite well to the body. He's a decent body puncher.
That was going
to
be the next question. He did that occasion quite a lot against Usyk. I know there was the shot that either was illegal or illegal. It's irrelevant. The bottom line is, it was still a good body shot, whether it was legal. But he also threw a lot of other body shots in that fight.
I think he's a good body puncher. And there's been concerns and question marks over AJ's tank. Mm. And I think if Dubois maybe targets the body early and tries to drag him into a long fight, then he has a better chance. In saying that, he gets hit a lot, Dubois, very clean. And we looked at the Hrgović fight. And Hrgović is a fighter who is good. Mm. I always thought Hrgović was overrated. I don't think he was the fighter that people made him out to be. And I think Daniel Dubois kind of exposed that a little bit. Mm. I think he gets hit too clean. I think Dubois gets hit too clean.
Yeah, the right hands. They can't let him go gung-ho and just take right hand after right hand. They can't.
And that's why I'm thinking they may try and slow the pace down and move a little bit more. But again, his jab is going to be the key. But if he takes a fraction of the punches against AJ, as he did against Hrgović, it's not going to be a good night for him.
I think we all realise that. I thought the referee in the Hrgović fight, after about two or three rounds, I thought he was quite concerned.
Yeah,
I thought he was looking around. I genuinely thought Daniel's going to get a warning here in the corner that he's got to get his act together. Well, the ref, I mean, he wasn't getting out of the way of one. No. He wasn't falling over and staggering.
No.
But he would be
against
AJ. Yeah. Now, AJ and Lee Wiley and Ben Davison, they'll be aware of that. They won't think he's just going to come out and walk into right hands all night long.
No, they're no mugs. They know the game and they know what they expect as well. So it'll be interesting to see. There may be points in the fight and early in the fight where tactics have to change, depend on what's going on and depend on the type of start from either man. So it'll be interesting to see. I think that both corners are going to be really important in this fight. And we look especially at Dubois and his dad.
Yeah.
His dad's in there kind of as a hype man, really.
Yeah. A talisman. Like
it works.
Straightforward.
You know,
man,
he listens to your dad, and I think that's working. Have him in there. Have him being noisy. Mm. I think that Don Charge is a very good coach as well. Good heavyweight coach. And the boys here at Ben Davison and Lee Wiley and Barry as well, they know what they're doing. They've got some incredible fighters and done some incredible things as coaches.
So there could be some changes as we go through a fight. Do you see AJ coming out quite forcefully, quite aggressive in the opening round?
Yeah, I think so. I think he'll try and stamp his authority. But they'll be aware of that jab. That jab for Dubois, anytime you listen to these sparring partners, you've sparred both.
Yeah.
The majority of them say AJ's a harder puncher, but Dubois' jab is like a good backhand.
Yeah.
It was really interesting. Moses Atama yesterday talked about it's really hard. It's a hard jab to read, and it's down to the position he throws it from and how he holds his lead hand. But Big Moses, who in my opinion is going to be the next guy taking over when these boys all bow out.
Still a teenager, by the way.
And he's still a teenager. But if Moses is saying that, then Dubois had a jab that he found difficult to read. AJ's going to find it difficult to read as well.
He is, but he's bigger. And he is more mature. And he does have an awful lot of experience now. Yeah. And I like some of the movement. Even in the Ngannou massacre, I still like the movement. I like the movement in the fight against Otto Wallin, who suddenly became a bad fighter during the fight.
Absolutely. That's been hard.
The actual movement, just the thinking.
Wallin's a horrible person to fight.
Absolutely.
And that's why you look at what he done the Fury and obviously the cut. But so he had that great performance against Fury, and then there was no big fights after.
No one wanted to touch him.
No one wanted to touch him. So AJ done a really, really good job against Wallin, and he's been kind of, he's almost been dismissed now as a poor fighter, which isn't fair.
Do you think we'll see something early in the fight, or do you think we might get a cagier fight than people expect? Because I personally think we might have a really furious first round. I can't see Dubois not wanting to counter if he gets caught with a couple of shots. I can't see AJ not wanting to. There's a bit of spite in AJ in this fight.
There is.
I think all of the ancient chat about sparring all those years ago, AJ tried to put all that to bed about 3 or 4 years ago. He hates that stuff. He hates people from the past benefiting from something they did many, many years ago in some way. So whether it's in the ring or whether it's in business, he really hates that. Yeah. And I think he feels a little bit let down by it.
You can sense that as well. But, I mean, if... You know, depending on who you speak to about the sparring stories, you know, Dubois had him over in the gym and everything else. But these are sparring stories. And
absolutely.
Sparring, for the most, doesn't really, shouldn't matter that much.
Yeah.
It was a long time ago.
Unless you know all the details of it.
Unless you know all the details. And if say, Dubois did have AJ over, there's got to be something in the back of his mind thinking, this big lad can punch. And I'm not saying this is even the case.
If
it happened, it's got to be playing on your mind.
Yeah, it has to be playing on your mind. Equally, AJ has, he's had a kind of look in his eyes. Like, for instance, you know, this week, to the public, they've only met two or three times, but they haven't. They've met backstage. They've met in lifts. They've met waiting in car parks for trucks. And AJ has just been, I've seen him quite a few times. I saw it last night. I saw it at the Odeon. Just glancing over, not staring Dubois down, because they're not involved with each other. Like Dubois being a huddle over here, getting in a car, and I've just seen AJ looking above the heads of the people he's with, just looking at him.
Yeah,
this is a very focused and, I would argue, a mean AJ.
I think so, and that's the AJ we all like, isn't it?
That's what we want to see.
Yeah, and I got that impression as well myself, Bunce. Even yesterday at the press conference, AJ was outside in a car, and he wouldn't come in. He just made Dubois wait. So he's playing games, but he's kind of just stamping his authority on it. I'm the king.
I'm the boss here, really.
Yeah, that's all he's doing.
So, Carl, getting down to it, let's say we started the first round now. Without a prediction, just give me a sort of sense of how you feel the fight might unfold. Couple of case scenarios, obviously. Yeah.
I think Dubois will maybe try and move a bit more than typically he does. Okay. I think that he will be trying to have it as a long fight. And again, like I've said before, it suits him. The longer the fight goes on, the better it is for Dubois. But in saying that, and I've stuck with this the whole way, I would be very, very surprised if the bell rings to start round 7.
Yeah.
I just think...
And Miko.
I just think they're two big, powerful, athletic men. Someone's getting knocked out. I don't see it being a long fight at all.
I don't.
And the both of them defensively aren't amazing.
No.
They both get hit a fair bit, but Dubois just
especially when they're
tired,
especially when they're letting their hands go. Colin, have you ever changed your mind in a decent-sized fight during fight week or
always
in the days before?
I always do it.
I've no shame with that either.
But there was someone, I was listening to someone, it might have been Barry Jones saying, that when he makes a decision, when the fight's announced, he makes a decision and he sticks with it. Because then, in the lead up to it, you get all these rumours and people adding and exaggerating things. And, I mean, anyone could potentially change their mind if you're listening to every single story, sparring story here. So... But for this one, I've picked AJ from the start. I'm still picking AJ, but in fight week now, I've given Daniel in my head a little bit more of a chance than I had at the start.
And a quick word on Anthony Kakachi, not defending his IBF belt, as we talked about there, but as we mentioned, only the IBO. You've seen him a couple of times this week. He gets quite hyped up in fight week, doesn't he, Kakachi? Is that the weight, or is that just Kakachi's weight?
Kakachi's just the way he is. Kakachi's a bit of a... I love Anto, but he's a bit of a loose cannon, shall we say. Like, he's a bit of a hothead. And you can see, I've done the head-to-head with him and Warrington, and both of them were really respectful of each other, but there's just this look about... He's almost like the look of a psychopath sometimes, and
he has got those eyes, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's got these mad piercing eyes, and he like really looks through. And he's Anto is when he's on it, as we've seen against Joe Cardina.
Yeah,
he's a ferocious man, and he literally wants to decapitate people. And I think he need to have that about him tonight. What a little concern I have for Anto, and I spoke to his team about this. He's going to get hit with a head by Warrington. That's what Warrington does. And it's not that like he's throwing headbutts around, but the way he bulls him with his chin down, he hits people with his head. And he gets away with it quite a lot. I'm worried that Anto gets hit with a head once or twice and loses the rag.
Yeah.
If he keeps his cool, he should win the fight, but that's my only concern here, Ferranto.
Because Warrington gets very upset if you suggest that he even does anything illegal in the ring. I mean, I actually, when we talked about it once, Barry Jones and I, and I talked about, you know, Josh's, you know, Josh can be a dirty fighter. I meant it as a compliment. I didn't mean it. I mean, Josh was,
well, Roberto Duran's a dirty fighter.
Josh was quite upset with it. So right. that adds a little bit of, just adds a little bit of extra spice to that observation you've made there. It's a fight where the referee might have to be very, very strong, and it's a fight where one of them is going to end up with a scalp cut or an eyelid cut or a cheek cut. I'm convinced of that.
I agree.
Good fighter.
I agree. A great fight. And Anto can, although he's the bigger man in the fight, keeping it at distance and keeping it long suits him. Yeah. But he can fight on the inside as well. He's a smart fighter, Anto.
Tell you, what a night, eh?
What a night
it would be. I don't know what. My car to take me to the boxing is 1 p.m. in the afternoon. The first fight is at 4:05.
Mental.
And we get Liam Gallagher in the middle and the rest of it. I mean, people have said to me all week, Buncey, stop hyping it. How can I not hype it? There's like five fights I want to see.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's an amazing card.
It is.
It's a shame that the Liam Kelly and Josh Kelly fight. Yeah. Isn't happening, but I'll tell you something. Ishmael Davis is up for this. He is up for it, and he put it on Josh Kelly yesterday at the press conference, and that's a fight. Just after listening to Ishmael Davis has got me slightly more excited.
Yeah. So, Cole, just before we say goodbye from our lounge here, nearly overlooking Regent's Park in the sunshine, Manny's walking around. He's had 17 bits of fruit from the bar inside. Claire's flown in from New York. She's in my new book as well. Paddy English is running around. He's going to give me some great news, I'm sure, about something in a moment, because he's been talking to all the bosses at Five Live whilst you and I have been having this little natter. Let me ask you this. What happens for the winner and what happens for the loser? So we're talking midnight now on Saturday night. Where does Dubois go, win or lose? And where does AJ go, win or lose, do you think?
If Dubois wins, I mean, he's right there amongst it. And the next fight's got to be the winner of Usyk and Fury. Has to be. And exactly the same for AJ. If he wins, if AJ loses, there's still big fights for him. Especially the Fury fights, it's not as big as it would have been,
but it's still big. Carl.
It's still a big fight that people will want to see.
Even if Fury gets beat by Usyk again,
it's still a big fight.
I'm on your side, I completely agree.
If Dubois loses, it's not the end of the world. You know, he will have lost to a very good fighter in AJ.
And everyone expected him to lose.
And he's young enough to come again. I mean, there's still plenty of time for Dubois to lose this fight and at a point in his career.
And have five more years, six more years, seven more years.
Be a world champion still. It's not the end of the world for him.
Do you see us getting Fury and AJ? Even, let's assume they both lose. If they both win, I think we have a bigger chance of getting it. But I still think we're going to get it, even if they both lose.
Yeah, I hope so. I really do hope so. And I think it would be a shame if we never, ever see that fight. Win, lose, or draw, depending on what happens. And both guys' next fights, it's a monster of a fight. Massive fight, Bonsai. That's another one you do at Wembley, even if they both lose their next fight. Yeah.
Or build something ridiculous in Saudi and go for like 132,000 records, something like that, remember, because the Saudis like records. So we've had, in so far, in six Riyadh season fights since last October, we've had 49 fights. So we've probably had 98 men have probably made their highest purses. So many of those 49 fights have been great fights. We're going to look back on this first year of this Riyadh season, Saudi-influenced boxing, as just a golden year. Because the fights that we've had in this period are fights that we wouldn't have got. We would have lost. For instance, Deontay Wilder and AJ, remember, world heavyweight champions, for 3 years and 3 months and never met each other.
Yeah.
That can't happen under this regime.
It won't happen. I wanted to ask you a question. When is Riyadh season? Is it never ending?
It's January the 1st to December the 31st.
Is it right? Okay.
Yeah, it lasts all that time, yeah. There's 5 minutes at midnight when it's not Riyadh season. that's the only answer that's permissible. Because they just keep on reinventing. Because don't you remember, if Tyson Fury didn't fight Usyk by the end of March, we've missed the season.
We've missed Riyadh season,
we've got to wait a year. We waited about... 6 weeks in the end.
Yeah.
Listen, Carl, it's been an absolute pleasure and a delight talking to you. We are... oh, we're sort of on a balcony somewhere. People are around us. As I say, Manny's been eating all the fruit in the lounge. He's probably going to get me evicted. We're going to be at Wembley. What a night it's going to be. It's been a great week. And you've been with us all week. It's been a fabulous week. We started at the Thames. We finished that night at 10 o'clock with the boats going up and down, the police chasing people on their speedboats. We've been all over London. We've been to some of the most historic venues. And tonight, it will all be about that vast venue. I didn't like Wembley at first with that enormous arch over the top of it. But we're going to be sitting down in our place. Liam Gallagher would have done his four songs. And we'd have had all the undercard fights, the winners and the losers, and out they will come. AJ in his trademark enormous robe. It looks like a tiny tent. And Dubois coming out smiling, and then they will set about it. What a fight. It's a domestic showdown. It's a British fight. It's the richest fight in British boxing history, and it's a record attendance of 96,000. I've been Steve Bunce, and this has been a truly extraordinary boxing week on 5 Live.
And thank you to the boxing team. We'll talk about the boxing a little bit later on. Eddie Hearn live on the programme ahead of the Joshua Dubois match-up at Wembley. 96,000 people. Hello, Fliss.
Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. So it's Felicity Hannah, it's me, Chris Warburton. You're here tomorrow as well.
I am here all
what
weekend.
What an absolute treat that is.
And for me, Chris. What a way to spend our weekend.
See how enthusiastic you were.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Yeah, good morning. It's 6 o'clock and it is Felicity Hannah and Chris Warburton with you on the breakfast programme on 5 Live, Saturday the 21st of September. And the news headlines. The BBC's been told Fulham's women's football team put extra measures in place to protect players from its then owner, Mohamed Al-Fayed. The billionaire who died last year has been accused of sexual assault by dozens of women who work for Harrods, which he sold in 2010. Our sports correspondent Laura Scott is following developments.
Gota Hoganers, who managed the team from 2001 to 2003, said that members of staff became aware that the late billionaire liked young blonde girls. He said that as a result, players weren't allowed to be left alone with the billionaire who owned the club from 1997 to 2013.
A senior United Nations official has warned the Middle East is at risk of a conflict that could dwarf the devastation witnessed in the region so far. The UN political affairs chief, Rosemary DiCarlo, was addressing a meeting of the Security Council about the deadly synchronised walkie-talkie and pager explosions in Lebanon.
Sir Keir Starmer will arrive in Liverpool today for Labour's first conference in government for 15 years. Some in the union movement are pushing for a motion to be debated, which would call for cuts to winter fuel payments to be reversed. Our political correspondent is David Comock.
Keir Starmer's insisted, and Rachel Reeves has insisted, that tough decisions have to be taken, and that means testing the winter fuel payments, ensuring that the very poorest get them, is the way forward. But clearly, politically, they are taking a lot of flak.
The US state of South Carolina has carried out its first execution in 13 years. Freddie Owens was executed by lethal injection just days after the key witness for the prosecution claimed he was innocent of shooting dead a shop worker in 1997. Robert Dunham is from the Death Penalty Policy Project, which provides legal representation for people on death row.
It raises issues of innocence, of prosecutorial misconduct, and how you go about carrying out executions. Freddie Owens, who has changed his name to Khalil Allah, is also a young African-American man. And it brings up the entire history of South Carolina's use of force, whether it's lynchings or capital punishment, against young black men.
And 700 soldiers, including some from the UK, will parachute.